Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. And we're going to be talking about a subject today that I know you've heard about, and that's ADHD. But this is going to be from a personal perspective of a mother who is a professional nurse and her journey in dealing with the environment of education, educating herself about this condition, and working with her little boy that she loved a great deal, obviously. Karen Lowry, welcome to the show.
Yes, hi, Donna. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a delight having you as a guest. It's always good to be able to talk to a parent that has been able to deal with this kind of a situation. Now, you have a BSN degree in nursing from the College of New Jersey. You have a master's in pediatric nursing from the University of Pennsylvania, and you've worked at Children's Hospital as a staff nurse in the pediatric intensive care unit and as a nursing instructor at the Holy Family University in Philadelphia. You also, because of your personal circumstances, decided that you wanted to become certified as a parent-to-parent ADHD family instructor. You and your husband have four children, so you've got a lot going on in your household. Karen, your story really touched me because you really, in writing this book, were writing about your journey of exploration into an arena that you really didn't have much of an experience with. Tell us what really turned you on to saying, I've got to find out more and link up with people who know more than I do. Tell us about the beginning circumstances with your son.
Well, my son, even though when he was much younger, 2-3 years old, I knew something was going on with him, but again, that was too young for a diagnosis. But when he was diagnosed when he was age 6, was kind of between kindergarten and first grade, and I found that it was considered to be a neurobiological diagnosis, and I knew that there was a lot I needed to find out. And the reason I decided that I really needed to find out was because there seemed to be a lot of intolerance in the school system regarding my son's behavior. And again, you know, ADHD has three types. One is the hyperactive impulsive type, one is the inattentive, and one is the combined. And he had the combined. So this is a child who could not focus on what was going on, could not sit still. All the kinds of behaviors that are expected in a classroom, he could not perform. And I can tell you in a nutshell, the time that I went to visit his first grade teacher in the very beginning of the year, wanting to support her, and as the class passed me and I introduced myself to this teacher, she looked at me, did not say hello. I introduced myself, and all she said to me was, little busy, and that kind of gave me the feeling for the kind of year that I was going to have, and that I knew that I had to move forward, become educated, and advocate for my son.
You make a statement in your book that I think for any of us, and it's not just relating to your child, and it's his experience and your experiences with what you are going to be discussing in the show, but it's a piece of wisdom that I think can cross all boundaries. We expect those who are professionals in any area of expertise to know best. That is not always the case. Wow. Those words are so true, and I compliment you because you decided you were going to take the opportunity, being involved in the medical arena, you realize that there's something going on here, and you have to really take that momentum as his parent, as his advocate, if you will. And you found yourself working, fortunately, you were able to be in the school environment, in the homeroom, and you just decided that you were going to watch what was going on. When you were involved in the school, now you had this one teacher who, just listening to your description, it gives you the chills because you realize that she's going to be difficult even for what would be considered, quote-unquote, a normal child, much less for a child that had different ways of thinking and responding to things. When you were in that homeroom and you observed your son, what really hit you? What, with your son as well as the environment, what stood out most vividly to you?
Well, you know, it was the very beginning of my journey, so I didn't fully understand what was going on, and that's the tough part about ADHD. It is an invisible disorder, and it is hard to understand unless you educate yourself. All you see are the exterior behaviors. You see this child who can't follow directions because he's not processing what's going on, because he chooses not, it's not that he chooses not to focus, he's just not focusing because it is not of interest to him to focus on. And that's really one of the basic feelings about ADHD. You know, lack of interest means no focus. And so I saw a child who really was not able to follow along like the so-called, like you said, normal child, and how all that impacted not only his ability also to deal with his peers, because he was always being yelled at. He was always, if anything happened in the classroom, it was his fault, no matter what it was. So all of those impairments were kind of showing up. And so if that's not addressed as time goes on, you have a child with low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty devastating as years go by, and a child is trying to adjust not only to the classroom but to, you know, peer relationships.
I know doctors that I've interviewed regarding children that have this difficulty focusing, they've noticed some interesting things. They might be watching television, and they can focus there, or they might have a video game, and they're able to focus. So they incorporate it because it's the way the brain's working. And
well, that kind of goes along with what I said, too. It's interest.
Mm-hmm.
High-interest type activities are mm-hmm. going to create the ability to focus. And also, in addition, some of the very many gifts that they possess is the ability to hyper-focus. So they can hyper-focus on things that they have interest in.
Right, and that's what you use as a tool. Let's talk about the testing for ADHD. Holy Moses, there's so many things that are promised, and people say, oh, we can fix this, we can fix that, we can fix the other. But making a shift in the way the brain works takes a lot of effort. How do they test for ADHD? You say in your book there's not a test that can concretely make a absolute statement about this condition.
Yes, and that's the tough part. You know, when you have a parent who is going for a diagnosis, you know, we want black and white. You know, we want to be able to see what it is, and then we want to know how to fix it. And this is not what you have here. This is a chronic neurobiologically based disorder that mm-hmm. we have no way of diagnosing using medical technology. I mean, yes, there are scans, and they have done scans, and they have discovered that ADHD people have underdeveloped prefrontal cortexes, which in that area is what controls, you know, attention and focus and those kinds of things. But, you know, we're not to the point where they're able to actually do a final diagnosis using that. So that's kind of in the stages of, you know, maybe someday we will have that to our option. What we have is, the first thing is making sure that you go to someone who has expertise in the area of diagnosis, because many children are misdiagnosed, and that can be a real problem. So once you know that person has that kind of expertise, whether it be a developmental pediatrician or a psychiatrist, then what they use, there's several kinds of scales, Vanderbilt, Connor scales. Those there are scales that are sent to the teacher as well as the parent, and they have to come up with, in these categories, 6 out of 9 characteristics in this diagnosis to come up with a diagnosis. It has to be something. Also, these behaviors have to affect at least 2 environments. So a lot of times people will say, Well, you know, what you're describing is any child. So how can you possibly put a label of ADHD on that child? Mm-hmm. And that is true to a certain extent. Certainly, you know, you're going to have a six-year-old who's going to be active, of course, and that's what you would expect, and that's healthy. But when it is a degree of impairment where it affects negatively two of that child's environment, that is a red flag. And that's when you go to that physician, and that's when... And also, I might add, too, it's also important before that that a child has a physical, and that includes hearing and vision, to rule out any other possibilities. And then goes the psychological type evaluation regarding the forms that are filled out, and, you know, a diagnosis follows that.
You have a statement in your book that I agree with thoroughly. ADHD is a medical diagnosis and a learning disability is an educational diagnosis, and no one in education has the credentials to diagnose ADHD. I can't tell you how many parents I have talked with through the years, especially with boys, where a teacher says, oh, they ought to be put on medication, and they're ADHD, and there was nothing wrong with these boys. They were being every inch a boy, and boys are always more active than the girls and have a very, very difficult time sitting still. Not that girls can't be active too, but there are so many people that will just put out on medication. I mean, I've talked to so many parents and this frustrates them, and they get so concerned because you know, medicine is not meant to be doled out just because you get irritated with a kid's activity. And you brought up some very, very good points. And I think that there's an overstepping of boundaries. What was your biggest challenge in dealing with the school system at the beginning? Because here you are, you have not got the education in it, which you now have, and knowing what you know, I'm sure you're able to assist a lot of people, but you were sort of in a blind spot. You were looking at your son and saying, there is something going on here, I need more understanding. Was the principal helpful at all? What did you find was your biggest challenge with people?
You know, it's just funny, you know, in this 21st century, I guess you would expect maybe more understanding of this disability or disorder. And I guess what I found was not a lot of education about it, and I was kind of desperate because at the time he was diagnosed, we were told that the recommendation was to use medication. And, you know, that's tough for a parent to put a little child on a stimulant, you know. So both my husband and I decided that we were definitely not going to go medication route. And we did take him to a learning consultant, and we had talked about using just behavior therapy. And I'll never forget this. She just looked at me kind of disgusted and said, if you really think behavior therapy is going to help without medication, you are totally wrong in this. And I remember thinking, well, I've now found someone who I will not deal with. And I said, okay, thank you, and I left. And I think that probably happens a lot to people, and I think what people have to realize in the medical profession and as well as the educational profession, first of all, that's a very personal decision whether or not you choose to medicate your child. And second of all, you have to also understand that, you know, I kind of use my background in nursing when I talk about this, but, you know, parents go through stages of grieving. I mean, obviously, this is not a lethal diagnosis. A lot of people have a lot of grief in their life and the things that they have to deal with, but it's still the non-perfect child from their perception. So they need time to go through this, and I think that's what we were going through. We needed the time. We didn't need someone to lecture us. We needed the time to make that kind of decision. So put him back in that classroom, and what did we have? We had a child who would not sit down in the seat. The teacher was at her wit's end, would not follow along, was not in the right book, much less the right page, would get in his peers' faces, would butt ahead of them, would get yelled at. And we both looked at each other and said, you know, we need to really think about what is best for him. And, you know, for his sake and for his self-esteem, we should consider this medication. So we made that decision. And with a lot of good results early on at the time. So it was a hard decision, and I have to say that we still grapple with that decision even now that he's 13. He's been on meds on and off several times because as they grow, you have to make changes, and sometimes they don't tolerate certain medications. So it's an ongoing issue, but also the coexisting condition of a language-based learning disability, which my son has, also kind of makes it critical to think that, you know, if this poor kid is having trouble with learning differences, he certainly needs the ability to be able to focus. And that was the other reason. We needed to give him the gift of heightening his ability to focus so that he could, you know, accommodate his learning difference.
Now, not only, well, he had the ADHD, but just what you mentioned, he had a reading learning disability consistent with dyslexia. And the brain works very different with dyslexia. We have a friend of the family whose daughter is severely dyslexic. And from the time that they finally figured out what was going on and the disciplines that the mother and father would put the child through, it was just amazing. And now she's graduated from college. She's just doing absolutely wonderfully. But she has to work 10 times harder. If not 20 times harder than an average student. But what they have found is that she is so gifted when it comes to doing things like music and photography. She's so creative. She's just astonishing. So she's finally found her niche that she fits, but she still struggles with certain factors of learning. Now, you went through a Catholic school. This was just devastating for you. The meds, when you finally were able to work with that, that was great. But you were so disgusted with so many different factors that you encountered in the educational system. And what, when you became aware of these things, how did you cope?
Well, you know, it's tough because, again, like I said, you know, we all expect professionals to be professionals in their field. And so when you are not in that field, you depend on them. And I started to feel that I could not depend on, and again, I'm not making a general statement that all teachers don't understand ADHD, certainly, but many of the ones that I came in contact with either did not or would not understand. In one case, when he was in fourth grade, we had a lot of difficulty with, and this is now in public school because I switched him out of Catholic school, when he was going into third grade. And he really had a tough time with her, and she was very intolerant. And I knew at that time I understood ADHD better than I had originally, and I knew that a negative environment would only create more negative feedback from my son and would create anxiety, which he already had as a coexisting disorder, which would shut him down and not allow for learning. So my quest was always to talk to them about that and increase positive behavioral type supports, to the point where the psychologist that I was having him see got on the three-way and talked to them. And also, I hired him to come to the school to talk to the school psychologist. And I didn't get real positive feelings from that at the time. And I remember saying to the one of the teachers, you know, I'm willing to pay for my psychologist to come in here and help them with a behavior plan. You know, and this is a young teacher. This is something that she will use forever because, you know, there will be other Jonathans to come down her path. You know, the diagnosis of ADHD is increasing. In fact, recently a study came out. It's between 2003 and 2007, the percentage of diagnosed kids with ADHD is up 22%. And we could all argue that, you know, of course, that, you know, maybe they're overdiagnosed or over med use and all that. I don't agree with that. I think that, you know, you're going to see maybe 1 in 10 kids with ADHD with varying degrees of impairment. So that is a beautiful thing, to have the knowledge base to understand how these kids work and how behavioral plans that push positive type reactions from the teacher can make all the difference in the world, with or without a child on medication. So it was frustrating to me because, you know, it's very tough because, you know, my son was classified with an IEP, which means that He's classified with a learning disability. And by the way, children can be classified without a learning disability in the school system if the impairment of ADHD is such that it is interfering with their academics. So just that alone could be, you could be classified, which means that you have modifications in what is learned, and there's a lot of things written down that needs to help them, that you know, state supports that need to be in place. But, you know, in John's case, I just feel that many times his ADHD impairment got in the way, and the supports for that somehow were missing. And when you get, and that's the tough part, I think. A lot of times parents get somewhat intimidated when they're invited to these IEP meetings, because these are all people, again, that are in the professional area of education, and you are just the parent. But, you know, I've told many parents, always remember that you know your child best, and you are part of the team, and you need to be able to support that and add information to help with their child's education.
One of the components that you brought out in your book is that you would interact with professionals, and they were sending emails back and forth, but you said you've got to talk to each other, for heaven's sakes, because you're not getting stuff across in these silly emails. And I thought, what is it with people that they think emails are going to be the absolute way to communicate? There's no personal interaction. There's no face-to-face. And it's absolutely amazing. And you bring out a point that in the school system, and of course the public school system has been up for scrutiny for a long time, but a lot of kids do fall through the cracks in education,
yes,
in public education. And there's a lot of things that are just not paid attention to. It needs to be brought up into the 21st century, and we've got technology that can be utilized, but it's very difficult when a system, a bureaucratic system, has been in place for a long, long time. Those that often run it say, well, it's been working well for so many years, so we'll just leave it as it is. We don't want to, well, don't want to rattle the cage any. But a lot of people are complaining, and there are many factors and many ways to teach and many ways to learn. And I recognize that a teacher, if she has 30, 33 kids in a classroom, she wants to have some format, and I do think parents need to be involved. You were very much involved as a parent, and I know in today's world, a lot of parents are not. And this is something that I think your son is very blessed with, because you were able to take a very proactive role. But how did you finally manage to find the teaching environment, the teacher, and also a psychiatrist, therapist that worked with your son? Because here he is 13. He's going into his teen years. He has made it through some very, very difficult times. What would you say to those people that are listening today that might have a member of their family that's going through this kind of a challenge? What do you need to look for? How do you look for a support for this kind of a situation?
Well, I'll tell you what I did. You know, again, when John was six, and I was just beside myself with concern and knew that his impairment was very, very significant, I reached out to CHADD, C-H-A-D-D, which is an organization, 22 years nonprofit, stands for Children and Adults with ADD, and it is a true lifesaver. I went to them to find out what in the world was this disorder of ADHD in my average to above average intelligent child. And once I gathered that information, and that's why I became a parent-to-parent family instructor, and that's, we teach 7-week classes to families who do struggle with this diagnosis and need information, because a lot of the basis for the program and the very important reason for doing this, I think, is remember that a lot of it, particularly if you have a child with combined ADHD, a lot of it has a lot of coexisting disorders like oppositional defiant disorder, which is what it just sounds like. I'm very oppositional at times. And it is also considered to be affecting their emotions. They can be very volatile at times And they certainly are frustrated just in general by the environment that they're in and being yelled at because of behaviors that they can't always control. So a lot, there's a lot of things going on with kids with ADHD. So the premise of these program is to provide education so that the parent-child relationship can be preserved. That is key, because you know that if this type of stuff is going on in the classroom with being yelled at, there's a lot of frustration, not following rules, all those kinds of things. You know that that kind of thing is also happening in the home environment, along with not only the parents, but with siblings. So families need to understand, you know, the exact, I guess I'm trying to think of something here. Just understand what the symptoms are, I guess, and what is normal for an ADHD child, and how you deal with an ADHD child on a daily basis without creating that negative cycle between the two of you, because we are all human. Of course we're going to get frustrated with a child who doesn't listen, who can't follow directions, who doesn't appear to want to listen to you, doesn't want to do homework. Homework is a big issue. So all of these issues become very negative in the home, and, you know, Chad is there to provide that education and support, for that matter. And they provide information. They don't promote any one psychiatrist or psychologist, but they do provide names of people, and certainly the parent-to-parent instructors in all of the states of the United States and where they're located.
Well, I think it's marvelous. And there was a point also that there was a psychologist, Dr. P, you call him in the book.
Yes.
He said that you needed to change your behaviors. So when a family, and to make John more accountable in certain ways.
Right.
When you're a family, and my goodness, you have four children total. This isn't something where you're able to delegate absolute certain amounts of times, but it's a whole learning curve that you have evolved through. You've got a wonderful family. Your son, Jonathan, is going to end up being a very productive human being. And what he's had to go through in disciplines has, in its own way, created a blessing for you, because you've entered into a whole new career and you yourself have become certified and very much wiser about dealing with children. Now, Karen, do you have a website that people can go to?
Well, it is currently being made. It's now in the process of being made, so unfortunately it's not there yet. It will be called Seventh Inning Sit once I get it done.
Okay.
But I do have, right now, I'm using what is already out there. I'm using what's called authorsden.com, and
okay.
You can find me on it just by, you know, putting my name in. And
all
also,
right.
My book is also on Amazon.com as well.
Great. The book is The Seventh Inning Sit. It's a journey about ADHD by her son, Jonathan. Catherine Lowry has been our guest today. And Catherine, I thank you
Karen.
So much. Your book, or Karen, I'm sorry. I don't know why I keep calling you Catherine.
That's okay.
Karen, your book is so insightful, and
you really have
put a great deal of your heart into it and communicating some very significant information. So for those of you listening, if you are aware of anyone that is going through challenges, this is a mother's story. A woman involved in nursing, a woman that has dedicated her time to assisting her son through some very difficult times that maybe you know someone else is going through and they could use the help. The Seventh Inning Sit, A Journey of ADHD. And again, her son is now 13, so he's getting up there and is going to have, I feel, a very successful life because of the dedication of his mother and the family and those people that she's been able to link up with through Chad and through other environments. This is what we need to remember. If the old saying is, it takes a village to raise a child, and her story exemplifies that on so many levels. Karen Lowry, thank you very much for being my guest today, and I wish you continued success in
thank
your
ongoing. Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me, Donna. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. Lots of good things to share. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious foods? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. If you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, this is the telephone number to call in to 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. If you are a first-time listener, welcome. And just know all I need from you is your first name or your initial. After that, I will ask you where you're calling in from. And then I'll tell you information about yourself or perceptions I may have. And then at the end, you're welcome to ask a question about anybody or anything that you like. Quickly, I want to mention for those of you in Western Washington, I'm going to be doing a special appearance where I will be giving mini readings at a Dickens Fair, which is in downtown Tacoma. This is a wonderful event. You'll find out more of the details in my newsletter. It's posted in the November newsletter. And the location where I will be appearing is King's Book. So I go in costume and we just have a wonderful time and no appointments, and part of the proceeds goes towards a local charity. So it's going to be on December the 11th. The hours for me will be from 11 until 4 to do these mini sessions with people. And it's always so much fun. And King's Books is just a marvelous, marvelous place right in downtown Tacoma. So if you can put it on your calendar, that's a Saturday. We'll have a great time as we always do. I believe they're going into their fifth year with this event, and it becomes more and more popular each year for a local happening. Also, don't forget, if you have a paranormal story and you would like to be a part of the book material that I'm putting together, I'd love to hear from you. I would like for you to send me your story, if it's about a ghost experience, if it's about an out-of-body experience, whatever unique happening has happened in your life that's affected your thinking and perhaps how you do things, I'd love to have you send it to me. I've gotten some absolutely awesome stories. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's DelphiInternational.com. And it will go into my file. Be sure that you give me your contact information as well. So, again, oh, and the deadline date is January the 1st, 2011. So be sure and send something along to me. We have got a wonderful guest that's going to be coming on with us tomorrow. That's going to be Brad Sachs. We're going to be talking about the empty nest syndrome. Yes, better yet, emptying the nest. It's a fascinating phenomena that in today's world, we have more young people living with their families longer. Well, didn't used to be that way. So what can we do to encourage young people to have a sense of confidence where they can leave the nest and be out and be productive individuals? So we're going to be discussing that, and I invite you to join. Also, on Friday, we are going to be talking about a subject matter that I did not have a whole bunch of knowledge about. Now I am in awe, I should say, of Ryan Van Cleve, who has put together a book called Unplugged, Video Game Addiction. I had no clue how serious this is. It is really an addiction. He is a video game addict himself, and he bravely is putting his real story out there for people to be aware of and to read, and it is mind-boggling. I would not have believed it would be possible, but it is. So we're going to have that on Friday. Good lineup of people. And if you want to find out who's coming up on the show, just check out show information on bbsradio.com, Station 1, The Donna Sebo Show. There is a little button. You just tap on it. You'll find out about all the people coming up. Elna Ray has a wonderful poem that I just loved. And, of course, here in the Pacific Northwest, we got blasted with a storm. It caused our internet connections to be down for a while. We were without electricity for a while. And then all of our colorful leaves sort of disappeared very, very quickly because we had almost hurricane-level winds blowing through here and a very violent storm. But if you're in a part of the country where you still have some of those gorgeous colors hanging around, I think you'll really relate to this little poem. Scarlet leaves flutter in the breeze, dancing their way to the ground, covering the earth with a pirouette of grace and wonder. Doesn't that paint a wonderful picture? Oh, it's just, it's absolutely great. And we have been graced. We've got so many leaves around. It's just amazing. But when these winds come through, they really do a number, and it's a very fast one, and it's intense. And like I said, it affected power for a long time. We finally, just a short time ago, were able to get back on the internet connections. Cable was up and running, which I was very grateful for. I've got emails coming in like you wouldn't believe. Are you a person that is sort of like me? You find that clutter, you get so good, you get everything efficiently organized, and man, you're feeling just great about it, and all of a sudden, you seem to blink, turn around, and you have got more paper clutter than you really want to deal with. And it's sort of like a moan groan, I guess I'll avoid it. Well, I know I go through that almost on a daily basis. It's so easy to have the paper stuff add up. And in our so-called paperless environment, yeah, right. No, it's there. And it's something we will always, I think, have to deal with on one level or another. It's just amazing. So here are some tips that I came across, and I thought I would share them with you, because I have found it to be somewhat effective with me. But I just have to realize, I just have to get down, get busy, and just be methodical about taking care of eliminating some of this stuff. So sometimes we can do a little organization. It makes it easier. Catalogs from stores that you've never heard of. Credit card offers? What about you? We must get a good 10 of those or more a week. Shredder is a great thing to have. You can really do some interesting things. Now, I didn't know you could block credit card offers. Were you aware of that? I didn't know this. You can visit a website or call, and I'm going to give you the information on both options here. And what you'll do is fill out a form to stop receiving offers from banks and financial companies for up to 5 years. Sound interesting? Here's what you do. You visit optoutprescreen.com, optoutprescreen.com, or you can call them at this number, 888-567-8688. And you'll fill out a form so that you don't receive offers from banks and financial companies for up to 5 years. Now, if you'd like to make a permanent application, so forget it, just don't send me any of it, you want to download the form to do just that at Opt-Out Prescreen site, and you will print it and mail it to the address that is given to you to mail it to. This, I think, is tremendous. I don't know about you, but I am absolutely astonished at the amount of credit card offers that come through. Now, what about catalogs? Well, catalogs usually I've not had too much of a problem with, because after a while, a lot of catalog companies are going online. But if you do want a paper catalog, they might send you one out, but many of them don't send them out all the time. Maybe it's once a year. They're really cutting back because it's affecting their bottom line, and more people are shopping on the Internet. So if you want to stop catalogs, you can go to catalogchoice.org. Catalogchoice.org. It's a free site that's already being used by more than 1.2 million Americans to stop catalogs from being sent to them. Now, if you're getting a lot of unwanted flyers, advertisements, offers, you can check out the Direct Marketing Association's website at DMA Choice, D like Donna, M like Mary, A like Adam, choice.org. Now, they will contact companies for you to take you off their mailing list. Now, there's a catch to this. Your information might be released again, so you may have to sign up to do this every couple of years. So this you might want to put in your address book. Keep it handy. Now, once you've done this, that can help cut back some of the clutter. So one of the things that a very good friend of ours said that he did, and I've not done it yet, is to utilize your scanner. And most printers have scanners built into them today. And you can consolidate reams of what you have in paper files and in photographic files, if you desire, into digital files. And they can be stored on one of your portable flash drives. And there is a person that said they scan in business cards or tax documents. And scanners are not expensive. So you can, they're under $100. So if you wanted to buy one especially to do that, you can do it. And then, who are the two top culprits for creating clutter? Magazines and newspapers. However, all you have to do is, as you're acquiring the magazines and newspapers, if you can store them in a certain spot, your newspapers can go in your recycled paper bin when you're through with them. And your magazines, don't throw them out. You can give them maybe to a Goodwill or maybe to some nursing homes or places that would love to have reading material for people. Check it out. Find out in your community where those magazines can go. And they might be sending them overseas, too. So magazines, if you're like me, you really appreciate the written word and you just hate to throw stuff away. So find out if there are facilities that would just be delighted to have you send them or give them, drop off your stack of magazines. Just tie them up and take a trip with your vehicle as you're out doing your daily errands and drop them off. Also, if you get a bin for each of your family members from your local office supply store, you can set them up somewhere and you can use them as a go-to place for any papers that need to be passed along among the family members. I wouldn't have thought of that, but that's not a bad idea. Also, I like to use something for bills and certain things that I need to be able to look at or keep in front of my face so that I don't forget about them, because that's happened to me where I've forgotten a bill. I have a sectional unit where I put bills in and I have specific things going in specific places, and that allows me to find it easily and quickly. And oh, I love my shredder, but it gets full so fast. One of the things I learned about shredders is sometimes they've got a mechanism on them, and after you've been shredding for a while, it'll turn itself off. Don't think your machine's died. It hasn't. It just automatically is turning itself off, so it cools down, and then it'll start up again. But shredders are wonderful. We have two, and they're in different locations, so it's easy to just pop papers in there and shred them up. And that goes in the recycle bin, too. Also, with the holidays coming up, that shredded paper would be great for packing cookies or anything that you might be thinking of sending out to places. Shredded paper can be used in more than one way. You can also use it in your garden, believe it or not. That's right. You can use it in your garden as a mulch, and it will really serve you well. So shredded paper can be used in many ways. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for a moment. We'll be back in just a moment. Give me a call if you so desire, 888-815-9756. When we come back, we're going to talk about how you should never give up on yourself. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Here in the Pacific Northwest, they've been predicting we're going to have snow. Well, the mountains are going to be loaded with it, and there's a heavy, heavy storm that's going to be coming in. But it's the kind of weather. Temperatures are dropping. Winter is coming in with tremendous passion, and we just absolutely love soups at home. And there was a recipe that I came across that matched so much of what I have done in cooking with one of my favorite vegetables, and that is kale. And I thought I would share this with you. The recipe was sent by Wilda LaGrossa. She said her mother, Becky, loved to serve this soup. And her mother remembered when times were really, really tough, and yet this soup was so nutritious that it was hearty enough that it really sort of stuck to the ribs. It's called a sausage, kale, and sweet potato soup. So if you're a vegetarian, just leave the meat out because the soup itself is going to be absolutely wonderful. Now what you do, it's very simple. You take a tablespoon of oil and you put it in a large pot. You're going to add a pound of Italian sausage links. I like spicy sausage, but you can use a sweet sausage in this, whatever you prefer. And you want to brown your sausage. And what I like to do is take them out of the skins they're in. I just take a sharp knife, split the skin, and then take the sausage out and put it in that little bit of oil. Frequently, the sausage will have enough fat in it that oil, you may not need that much oil. But for flavor, I would say if you have an extra lean sausage, which sometimes that you can get, depending on whether you like it sweet or spicy, it's up to you. And you want to cook it all the way through, and that's just going to take you about 10 minutes. And then what you want to do, she would, in her recipe, she would take the sausages, she'd keep them whole. I take the meat out, and I break it up. So however you want to fix it, it's your choice, whatever you'd like to do it. And then you want to add one onion, and I'd use the biggest, fattest onion I could find, chop it up, and add it to the rendered drippings in the pot after you remove your sausage. And you just want to cook it until the onion is lightly brown. That just takes a couple of minutes. Then you're going to take and put your sausage back in the pot along with your onion. And what Wilda did with her recipe, she put in a half a teaspoon of garlic powder and a quarter of a teaspoon of pepper. I would like to use the fresh garlic. I would just take a couple of cloves, and it's all according to your own taste as to how much you want to put in. But I'd put in a couple of cloves of garlic, and then you, with a little bit of pepper, and you cook it for about a minute, and then you stir in 6 cups of water, and you can use 4 teaspoons of chicken bouillon granules, or just use straight chicken stock, whatever you like, or beef stock. And then you add 2 pounds of sweet potatoes. Of course, you peel them and quarter them and cut them in 1/4-inch thick slices. You cover it, bring it to a simmer over your medium-low heat, cook simmering occasionally until the potatoes are tender. And that's going to take about 12 minutes. But you can then take a pound of kale, and you want to have washed it and removed the stems, because they can get real tough. And you just tear them. Tear your kale up, and then just put it in your pot, cook it over low until it's wilted. And the kale will wilt in like 5 or 6 minutes. And then, if you like, what she did, she added a half a cup of old-fashioned rolled oats over the soup and just stirred it, and that added a thickening to it. But I would say, with or without the oats, you have got a meal here that it's hearty and it smells wonderful when it's cooking, and it tastes delicious. It's a great way to get the greens during winter. The greens will not be bitter. They're going to have a nice texture in this soup. And I'll tell you, it is just absolutely wonderful. Now, if you wanted to use different seasons, different seasoning types of meat, seasoned types of meat, wanted to use a bratwurst sausage, use your imagination. You can do all kinds of things with this. You can even add other vegetables if you like. But this is just another version of how to use kale, and I'd recommend, if you're a busy soul, which I know so many of you are, use your crock pot. You can take all of these ingredients once you brown your sausage and your onion. If you don't have time to brown the onion, don't even worry about that. Just put everything in your crock pot, put it on low, and let it cook. And it will be ready for you when you come home at night, with some fresh, hot, crusty bread with a marmalade and butter. Oh, my goodness, you've got a wonderful meal. And why not fix a little cherry cobbler to go along with it? It's just a great thing to do. Soups are marvelous, and you've got so many things you can do with a soup. You can throw in leftovers. You can do all kinds of stuff. But that's a recipe that I think is a real easy recipe to fix. And it's, like I said, be innovative with it. It's worth doing. It's great when the weather gets cold. Don't give up on yourself. A woman by the name of Carmen gave so much time to her family that she thought she would never be able to achieve her dream. What was that dream? It was one of becoming a teacher. However, there came an opportunity for her that enabled her to actually go back to school and get an education. She found out about a funded program called Learning Works. And it provided free career training to adults that needed help to go back to school. She said she realized after going onto this site, Learning Works, that she could earn a certificate to work as a preschool teacher. Well, her family was very supportive of it. She was 40 years old when she decided she was going to go back to school. Her kids were almost grown. And her kids said, hey, go for it. This is great. And she was just thrilled. Her whole family backed her 100%. And she said it was hard because as a mature woman, she said, I'm just going to quit. I just don't know that I can handle it. But her family wouldn't let her do it. They said, nope, you've got to do it. You've got to finish it. So by golly, the whole family pitched in. Carmen was able, after a lot of hard work, to get an internship at a preschool. And her family loved to hear the stories of what she was going through when she was serving in her internship. Well, finally, she finished her program with honors, and she said, I was asked to give a speech at my graduation, and this is what she said. She said, it seemed like going back to school would never be possible, but this program was exactly what I was looking for. I not only got experience as a teacher, but I learned I can be a role model for my children. I'm so thankful to my family and the Learning Works staff. Without them, I wouldn't be here. You have the same opportunity. Remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever give up on your dreams. Whether it's going back to school, becoming accomplished in any area, you can have that dream fulfilled. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we'll be back with you. Same time, same place. Again, remember, you're the master of your thinking and your actions. Do what means the most to you. God bless. Talk with you tomorrow. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.